Today's conversation with David Labouchere is likely one of the best talks that Dan and I have had in our lives. David talks about ultimately being grateful for the things you have in life, giving 110% to everything you do, and ultimately living a life where you are remembered as a good person that made an impact.
Oh man, this was such a good conversation, and the things that I got out from it was just simple things like be good at listening, talk less and listen more. Always be a work in progress. And when you review your day and you look at what maybe you haven't achieved, look at it the other way around. Look at what you have achieved well and then get good at it. Focus on what you're good at and then get better at it. This is such a good conversation. I can't wait to hear more.
Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast, where Dan and Adnan peel back the onion on our guest stories and on each other, all in an effort to change the narrative of failure. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Fail Forward podcast with Adnan and Dan. Today's guest is Mr. David Labouchere. David, why don't you introduce yourself for us?
Okay. I'm a 60-year-old father of two, a happily married man, 31 years married to Caroline. I'm a serial exerciser. I train a lot. I've done a lot of races. My preferences for triathlon. I was in the army for 30 years. So I've got quite a sort of cross section of life. And at 60, I've decided I'm a little over halfway. At 53, I actually announced to everybody I was halfway. So I guess I've got to live to 106. And I'm now starting to do things with my life that should help me reach that. Of course, I might get run over by a bus, nothing I can do about that, but if I've got a choice, I will try to control what I can control. So 60-year-old, triathlete, father, ex-military man, and now a professional coach. So what I do for a living is helping mostly very senior people, senior partners of law firms, CEOs of large corporations, who tend to discover something that we call in the army the loneliness of command. And my job is just to be somebody with whom they can reflect over where they've been, where they are, where they're going. And reflection is what takes people from good to great.
Talk to me more about the reflection portion. Like what is the kind of things that reflection has brought to you, but also brings to your clients?
Well, the key part of this is knowing yourself. Some of us go through life letting life happen to us. And for many years, I certainly did that. And it's when you realize that you can control a lot of what happens, especially in the moment, especially now. You can't control the future. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Will I live to 106? Who knows? But what I can control is what I do today. So reflection is where you look at where you've been and see if there are any lessons to be learned. And if there aren't, then you put that behind you. Reflection is all about putting something into the rearview mirror. And there's a real reason why the rearview mirror is so small and your windscreen is so large. Okay, if you spend your time looking backwards in that rearview mirror, you're not going to have a great drive. If you spend your time looking forward, all the opportunities are in front of you. But you have to think about what are opportunities, and you have to think about what you're doing at the moment in order to avail yourself of those opportunities in the future. So it's thinking about you, yourself, and I. And if you can think about self and work out how you're landing with people, how you're perceived by people, then that's going to give you a lot more control as well. So I start with self, and then I try to understand other people. Because obviously as a coach, I need to have an elite level of empathy, which is not always the case, and that requires work. I need to listen as well as doing what I'm doing now, talk too much. I need to talk much less. A good coach won't talk more than about 20% of the time that he's with his coachee. Mm-hmm. So that gives the coachee a chance to speak. And there are many tricks that coaches use to get coachees to speak. So reflection for me is getting somebody to think about themselves and then to think about the people who matter to them. And once that's organized, then you think about the organization that you're part of, whether it's your community or your business. So know yourself, know your people, and know your organization in that order. And that's what we deliver in getting people to reflect.
Yeah, that really hit me straight away. So I spent a lot of time when I moved to Dubai 3 years ago. just reflecting. I was in quite a high corporate role, climbing the ladder, the same as everyone else would do, or everyone feels they should do. But when I moved to Dubai, I'd become a full-time dad, and it wasn't part of the plan. And I looked after the kids, and I had time that I never had before to look back, and then suddenly realize, where was I going wrong when I was back in the UK? What was I got burnt out, I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and that's how I was found running, and a kind of a passion as well. So well, I was
a fantastic solution to have come up with, because of course, you know, that sort of physicality is going to mend everything.
Yeah.
Brilliant solution.
It was just a complete change in mind, just a complete mindset shift where my focus was on looking after the kids, bringing them up, creating opportunities for them, and just really looking back on, yeah, everything that happened in my life. I wasn't trying to fix, but I was just trying to unlearn things and try and create new habits, routines. So I would tick things off in the morning. Right, I'm going to walk the plants, walk the dog, walk the dog, not water the dog. And then as I was getting through the day, I'd be ticking things off and I'd be gaining momentum. And I used to listen to a lot of podcasts, so I'd listen to people. I'd gain experience from, you know, what other people do as well. But the reflection, I think, was the biggest key for me moving here and just becoming who I am now. It's just looking back on who I was and who my parents were as well. And did I want to become like them? Do I want to set a different example for my kids, you know, new generation going forward? I want to be able to give back more and not look at, you know, purpose in my life, to be able to create profits, create wealth, to be able to burn myself out again? Or do I want to be in a position where I want to be able to give back and spend more time almost as a coach, like you say, as well, where I'm listening to people and I'm spending time with people in the community, like security guards, cleaners, and not people within a company that I want to be scratching to get information from to be able to kind of work my way up the ladder. So that hit me straight away, just what you were saying there, David. But can you tell us a little bit more about your upbringing as well, and as a child? And
I can, but let me just bounce back on you on that one, because it sounds like you try to leave everybody you meet on a daily basis a better person for having met you. That's what came across just then.
Yeah.
Now, what a great goal. What a great goal for anybody. If everybody you meet in a given day is a better person for you having met them, wouldn't that be a wonderful day? You go to bed that night. I bet you do.
Yeah.
I bet you go to bed that night having thinking, okay, today was a good day.
Yeah,
and we just need 7 good days to have a good week.
It's true.
And we just need 52 good weeks to have a great year. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't take much if you do those little things right. What a fantastic way to live your life. Dan, I'm with you.
Yeah, no, it feels good. And in fact, when I get home at the end of the day and I think, what could I have done better? Because I was trying to review myself as well, review the day. I wish I'd have said more to this person. I wish I'd have reached out to this person, because I know the next day when I can see they've had a bad day on social media as well.
What would it look like if instead of asking yourself, what could I have done better, you ask yourself, what did I do well? And do more of that. Because the whole world concentrates. I'm sure in your corporate life, you were told, okay, you're pretty good at this, pretty good at this, pretty good at this, but you're weak here. You're going to have to work here. No, what would it look like if you just got told, you're good here, and good here. Do more of that. Mm. Forget where you're not strong. Doesn't matter. That's obviously something you don't enjoy. Let's only do the stuff we're good at and leave somebody else to fill in the gaps. And that's why we get married. And hopefully you'll marry somebody who can fill in the gaps and you can fill in their gaps. And then you've got a high-performance team. There's no such thing as a high-performance individual. I don't believe it. I think we've all got huge gaps. So find a team that can fill in those gaps.
Yeah. That's very true. And that's how we ended up creating this synergy that Adnan and I have had, I think, since we met from the US to Dubai, that we had similar interests. And
there you go, high-performance team.
Yeah.
Where one of you will be good at some things and love it, and the other one won't be quite so at home with that and will dread doing it and will find it saps their energy. Well, then give that away. So don't start working on your weaknesses. Start doubling down on your strengths.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As you were talking, I was thinking about actually something we talked in our most recent podcast about kind of your why do the things you do. And as I'm learning and growing through a lot of this, I'm realizing that a stronger why is never one that focuses on the self. It's the one that focuses on the others, on the communities, on the people around you. Because more than even just how, you know, what did I do well, no matter whatever happens to me during my day, if I take the perspective of like, I've made someone else's life better, I have, you know, made my mom's day happier. My friends feel more motivated because I was a part of their lives today. Like, regardless of what I've been through today, you feel like you've done good in the world.
You see, this is a great insight. And what you've just said is that if you do something for a higher purpose, for somebody else rather than yourself, rather than for self-interest, I mean, take anybody who's done something extraordinary, Mo Farah, Usain Bolt, or Luciano Pavarotti. Doesn't matter, a high performer. Ask them why they do what they do, and they will say, for my dad, or because I want this community to be better. They will never, the highest performers, will never have done it for themselves. They'll always have done it for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're saying.
And that's kind of almost how my mind is moving to, because it's interesting, as you start to get involved in a craft that expands human potential, you realize that every single human really is limitless. All they need is just the smallest level of encouragement and belief to make them believe in themselves. And like, just seeing people go from a tough mental state to a much more confident, structured mental state, achieve things, find like who they are and what they want to do, like, that's more exciting than any PB that I can get.
And that's why I'm lucky to have found my purpose, which is, I call it selfish selflessness. I know that the more I give, the happier I'll be. So it's not at all selfless. It's all about me, but very indirectly. Mm-hmm. Because if I can make other people better, happier, more confident, I'll go to bed that night in a great state myself. And so it's a case of being commercial, where you always try to give more than you expect to receive. But actually, the universe is really generous if you are generous. So perhaps the one thing I'd love to give people, anybody who might be listening to this today, is never miss the chance to be generous.
Yeah, that's a huge statement, I think. And when you said you had that moment where you suddenly found your purpose.
Yeah.
Was there a specific time in your life that you suddenly found that moment?
Interestingly, there was. And most people find their purpose in their 40s, if they're lucky. In my case, I was 52. And this comes down to, there's a great graph that shows this, but basically you can be operating for pure performance. And if you're operating for pure performance, money, acceleration in your career in some way, promotion, election to some political position, if you're operating in that sort of sphere and doing whatever it takes to get on, then that's a performance-based life. But if you're operating in the other sphere, which is meaning, and you're just going for meaning, you're saving the planet one leaf at a time, you haven't got a penny to rub together, but you're up a tree in Greenham Common back in the 80s trying to make sure that nobody has nuclear weapons on British soil. Okay, fine, you've got a higher purpose. But actually, you're going to have a crisis of performance when the pretty girl comes along and you can't take her to the movies because you've got no money. So you need to have that promotion, etc., but in a world where you're getting some meaning. And this is where Maya Angelou came up with the idea that there are four parts of happiness. One is meaningful work. The second, meaningful relationships. The third, contribution. And the last one, and let's face it, the three of us sitting here are blessed. It's gratitude. We are so lucky to be where we are in Dubai, relatively well off, being able to do what we want to do in the time that we want to do it for the people we want to do it for. I mean, we should be really grateful to someone, whoever it is, whatever it is, whatever a higher being exists, if one exists at all, to nature. Doesn't matter what we call it. But we need to be grateful to the universe for what we've got. So that gratitude is the fourth point. Now, I always add one. So Maya Angelou says, meaningful work, meaningful relationships, contribution, and gratitude, and I add progress. Because I think we need, as humans, just maybe it's just me, but we need as humans to be better today in some way than we were yesterday, and to be better tomorrow than we are today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why do you think that? I want to delve into
it. It may be the achiever in me, but at the end of the day...
I'm in agreement.
At the end of the day, I was talking earlier, we were chatting about mastery, mastering whatever it is that you do. And mastery means that you're not actually making much more improvement, but you're really good at the level you're at. And I think that that is a finite business to be the master of something. You need to be improving. You need to have, otherwise it drops off. You lose interest. I'm really good at this. Mm. Okay, now I've lost interest in it because I'm really good at it. You need to find an extra challenge. You need to find a progression, something new, a new target, a new goal. If you achieve your vision, your five-year vision, are you going to stop? And then are you going to stop when you've got what you wanted 5 years ago? No, you're not. You're going to look forward and you're going to say, hey, okay, I've got what I wanted 5 years ago. What do I want in 5 years? And there you've got a strategic goal. You were pushing towards it earlier. If you've got a strategic goal, you know where you're going. Then you can put things in place in a line with that goal rather than just doing stuff because things happen and you react.
Yeah.
What would you say to someone then that wants to become a master? Let's say they're becoming an expert or something. So they're a bit better than the average person. They have something to give back. They're sharing their knowledge. To become a master of something, you have to be committed, disciplined, consistent. And there's a lot of talk at the moment about, you know, success and becoming a master in things, whether it's business or performance in sport. What would you say to someone that wants to get into other things? They want to become a master at something. Let's say it's a triathlon, but there's running, there's swimming, and there's cycling involved. But let's say they've got other interests in other sports as well. Let's say paddle tennis has come out. They want to get good at that as well. There's this thing about being like focusing on an inch wide and a mile deep on something to become a master of something. But how does that help other people that want to become better at other things as well? What would you say?
Okay, I'm going to go off on a little tangent here and look at becoming a master. It sounds like there's a finite point in time where you're suddenly a master.
Yeah.
No, I think you get into a state that is continuing present rather than a moment in time where you're a master. Oh, I'm a master of this now. No, you're in mastery, which is an evolving state. It's a position where every moment is just in that state. You didn't actually achieve mastery. Mm-hmm. You're in mastery. So it's a complex idea, but then the answer to your question, in my view, is constant learning. Constant learning, constant getting better. We will never be perfect. Perfect is the most imperfect target because it's impossible. We will never be perfect at anything. You will always be able to walk faster or better. You know, place your feet down more accurately in front of you in the most basic way. You can always do everything better than you're doing it today. You can speak better. You can listen better. You can be more empathetic. You can be more of a support. There's always better. And therefore, mastery is that state where you are constantly learning something new. And remember, if we can be 1% better today than we were yesterday, and 1% better tomorrow than we are today, the compound interest, because it's not, you won't be 365% better at the end of the year. You'll be 3,788% better at the end of the year because each 1%, you're compounding on that 1%. And by 365 days later, you're 3,788.34% better than you were before.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the numbers. Might have just made them up.
It sounds like it. It sounds like the Darren Hardy.
Yeah. It's interesting, as we talked about the final element of Maya Angelou's framework that you added, and then you talked about mastery and learning and growing every day. I realized that, I think I figured out the why on progress. It's operating at the frontier of your level of capability. That feels like the right thing to do.
That sounds like perfect sense.
And there's a kind of feeling that's hard to really put my finger on that you feel when you're pushing against the walls of what you're capable of, or if you're walking that tightrope there, where, I mean, anything from the fitness we're all involved in to the fact that this podcast, that's something new to Dan and I, and probably even you to a certain extent, the conversations you're having, you know? It's like, I don't know this and I feel like I'm failing, but it's novelty. And those unique moments where you feel like,
I've discovered something new. Oh, this works. This doesn't. Let me adjust. Like, that is something that's so fulfilling to the mind.
Well, there was a great little sort of soundbite that British Army used for many years, their advertising, and it said, be the best, which kind of implied that the Army was very good and that sort of thing. But actually what it meant was be the best you can be. Be the best version of yourself is what you're saying out there.
Mm-hmm.
Push on those boundaries every day. Try the edge of the envelope, see what happens. Sometimes you'll fall off it. You know, in physical terms, you cramp up and run out of glycogen in your muscles and your liver. That'll stop you.
Yeah.
Okay? And sometimes you reach the edge of that envelope. But reaching the edge of the envelope is part of the journey, because now you know where that is. Let's see if we can just progress that envelope a little bit more next time rather than fall over the edge of it. That's a real mixing of metaphors, but I'm sure people would understand.
I mean, staying on that topic, be the best.
Be the best you can be.
Be the best you can be. So I'm going to be a bit selfish and ask a question now to someone that I know is going to be listening, or I want to hopefully know that they're listening. And he's been in the military himself quite a number of years. He's a Royal Marine. He was a Royal Marine. He left, he retired from the Marines only a few months ago. Now, I already know the challenges that he's going to face with this new life that he's going to lead, finding his new his purpose. He is one of the most elite performers that I've ever met. Personal friend, he got me to do the Three Peaks Challenge when I was 26, from being a big drinker, a heavy smoker. I was very unfit. And within about 6 months, we got a silver award in the Three Peaks Challenge. And I didn't believe I could do it, but he gave me that belief. So he's a very inspiring guy. He's been an Olympic performer in triathlons as well, in his competitions now. But I know now that with someone with, I know with the strongest mindset I've ever met, he's going to be in a position where things are going to be different. Challenges are going to be coming around the corner. This feeling of loneliness, having been part of something for so long. Can you give any kind of feedback as to how you felt when you left the British Army and what you did next? And something that my friend could relate to that could help him.
Okay, if you're listening, Royal, it's not as hard as Adnan's making it sound. Okay, you had a community and you need to build a new community. And that's the community that you can help. Just like you fought, and I've no doubt that if you've been in the Royal Marines for a while, you were fighting. Okay, you fought not for Queen and Country. We all know that we fight for the guy standing next to us. And you'll find that you can do that in corporate business. You can do that in civilian sport. You actually race for the guys that train with you. And that's something that a Royal Marine will have no difficulty in recognizing like a shot. It's all about the others with whom you suffer, with whom you toil, with whom you achieve. It's all about them and getting them across the line. And he will have no problem. Royal, don't worry, it's going to be easy.
Let's talk about suffering a little bit, because in my life, I've noticed that the strongest people that I have built relationships with is people that I've gone through the dumps with, the people who I've truly suffered with. Like, happy moments are great to share, but it's always the people that have seen me at my lowest and have been at the lowest with me that I feel the closest to. Like, what's that all about? Why do you feel like that's important?
Shared suffering.
Shared suffering,
this,
yeah.
This is why I think that things like marriages work best if you have worked out some difficult problems. You know, any sort of teamwork is not just about sharing the highs, but also recognizing that you cannot have just wave tops. You've got to have the troughs in between the wave tops, or the wave tops become ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to have high performance, you've got to have low performance. You've got to have somewhere from the depths from which to plumb yourself up to the heights again. If you just have a flat line, nothing would be exciting. Mm-hmm. Nothing would feel like an achievement. So it's peaks and troughs in life, and the steeper the peak, the higher you get, the lower you would have had to go in order to recognize that this is a high for you. So I think what you've done there is by sharing the troughs with somebody, you can recognize the happiness of a true peak. But you also know that once you hit a true peak, going down and go downhill for a while, this is in sport, it's periodization. You know, in sport, we have Olympic athletes who have this macro periodization of 4 years. They've actually got to get right in the depths of some really nasty training in that 4 years before they can reach the peak of the Olympic year, only, you know, which might be 3.5 years away. I mean, that's a tough place to be operating. And then you have a different set of periodization within the year where you might have one or two key races that you're trying to achieve. But in between those, there's going to be a deep trough. Mm-hmm. And then in the micro periodization, when you're training really well, you might have 1 week of really, really, or 2 weeks of really, really tough stuff, the troughs, if you like, the hard, hard work, followed by a week of testing where you reach new heights, because all you're doing in that week is testing to see where you are, and you've got all your energy back, and you're ready to really smash the new PBs, etc. Mm-hmm. So all of this reflects this peaks and troughs. But if you don't have any troughs, how can you have a wave top? How can you have a high moment? It won't be a high moment. It'll just be ordinary.
A data point is only recognized relative to other ones, right?
Exactly. So the lower you can get, the higher it'll feel when you get out of there.
Yeah.
Which means for an athlete, it's all about really hard work. Yeah.
And it's not only just that the high feels higher, but it's, you come to it with a newer appreciation of, or like a humbleness towards, wow, that was way harder than I thought, you know? And I realize also another thing is when I go through tough moments, it makes you more cognizant and receptive to see when other people are going through them.
I love that. But what you're basically saying about this friend of yours, this person that you're really close to, this family member, it doesn't matter what it is in the hard times. What you're basically saying is that you've seen each other in a bad place, and this goes to trust. Because if you know how he or she is going to react when the going is bad, that gives credibility. If you know that they're going to deliver on the promises they made because you've seen them do it in a really hard place, that gives them reliability. And if you know them really, really well, and it really matters to know somebody well, to trust them, that's intimacy. So credibility multiplied by reliability, multiplied by intimacy, is what you need for trust. And if you miss any of those three, that person is not the person you're closest to. You've got to have all three. And that works in business.
Mm-hmm.
In business, it's all about trust in business. If you want to delegate your work, which is vital if you're at the top of a business, you've got to delegate as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Then you need to trust the person you're delegating to. And this is where it comes down to having the intimacy piece, credibility, I said, reliability, I said, intimacy, means one-to-ones. You will never trust somebody unless you spend time one-on-one with them, sitting or preferably walking or moving with them in the same direction, because there's a real correlation between having a walking meeting and success and having a face-to-face meeting, confrontation and failure. So I always used to take, in the army, I always used to take anybody I needed to give a good talking to for a run. I'd say, you're coming running. And they would either dread or really welcome going for a run with the commanding officer on the basis that something big's going to happen here. He doesn't take people for a run unless he's either going to promote them or fire them. And yeah, sometimes the shorter runs were firings, the longer runs were promotions. Because I'd eke it out. Sure, this will only take 15 minutes. That was probably a bad interview. But if this is going to take 40 minutes, you know, pretty good. He's not going to give 40 minutes to somebody he's going to fire. But moving in the same direction is really good for a positive outcome, because the physical movement in one direction binds you together and you'll be much more positive about your thought processes in that correlation. I think I've taken this off subject. I'm sorry.
There's a word that ties that together as well, then, that you did mention. I kept thinking that it ties that to authenticity. That's just being your true self.
Well, anything else is exhausting.
Yeah, just...
Yeah,
but some people can't be that way, can they, I guess?
But it's pretty exhausting if you're trying to be somebody else.
Yeah. It literally takes your energy out of you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It sucks your energy out of you. And if you can, and the great thing about being nearly 60 is that actually I don't really care.
Yeah.
I don't want to impress the girls anymore. I don't want to impress you, because I just want to do what I do now. And if that upsets people, sometimes I do. Sometimes I upset people.
That's powerful.
But it's really great that I don't have to pretend anymore. I'm not trying to get the promotion. I'm not trying to compete against anybody else in terms of my lifestyle. And yes, I'm actually only competing against myself when I do sport, because I don't know who's going to turn up. So when I train the best I can be, so that when I turn up, I will be the best I can be on that day. And if that's better than everybody else, great. But if it's not, well, second or third is second or third. 15th is 15th. I was the 15th best that day. Fine. That's all I had, as long as I gave it everything in the training. And I gave it everything in the competition. I'll be a happy man. I'll go home happy. Doesn't matter that I didn't win. Somebody was better than me. There will always be somebody better than us.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what kids need to know more as well. Kids in schools, my son, he gets it from me. I'm so competitive. And I'm a true believer in just compete with yourself. And he had a swimming gala the other day, and I told him, just don't look to the left, to the right, just look forward, swim as fast as you can, and know that when you get to the end, you have tried your best. Mm-hmm. He can't get it still. I come third. Well, great. Pretty well done, come third.
Took me till I was 52. How old's your son?
7.
Yeah, he's got a few more years of practice.
But I think, I don't know, what's your thoughts on, you know, kids and achieving, winning and losing?
Okay. First off, I think that rewarding kids for winning is really valuable, and rewarding kids for taking part is not real life. Mm-hmm. Losing, failing in life is part of life, of part of every day. We will do something today that we feel that wasn't as good as it could have been. That should be deemed a failure, and you reflect on that, learn from it, and do better next time. But if we reward everybody with a competitor's medal, you all did well, well done, then nobody will ever actually try to improve themselves. I get a medal anyway. Why should I come first if I get a medal anyway? Why should I be the best I can be? I just have to be as good as them. Well, that leads to mediocrity in everybody, being the average. Who on earth is listening to this podcast who wants to be average? None of them. Nobody who is listening today wants to be average. Everybody would like to be better. Of course we would. It's human nature to be better than the next guy. Because when it comes down to it, in evolutionary terms, we were competing for the best mate. Whether we're male or female, doesn't matter. In evolutionary terms, we want the best genetic pool with which to push the human race forward. And that meant competing. So competition is 3,600,000 years old. And I'm really uncomfortable with schools trying to iron it out.
What's your method of reflection? Do you write? Do you meditate? Do you talk it out?
Well, there's a great... The trouble with life, and you'll find this, everybody will say it, I don't have enough time.
Yeah.
We all have a finite amount of time. We all have 24 hours a day. That's it. So we have a finite amount of time, but an infinite amount of things that we can do. So we will always have more things that we can do than we have time for. We will always have that. For the rest of our lives, we will have this mismatch between the available things to do and the time available. So the first thing you do is wipe out the bad stuff. Stop doing stuff that doesn't serve or support you in life. Okay, stop the smoking. I was a 70-a-day smoker. That means often having two on the go at the same time, because, yep, and I would light the last one, the next one from the last one. I was a chain smoker. I would smoke through meals. I would smoke in bed at most inopportune times. I would smoke first thing in the morning before I had a drink or brush my teeth, and I would drink. So all that is stuff that you want to cut out because you know it doesn't actually serve or support you in life. But once you've got rid of the stuff that doesn't serve or support you in life, unfortunately, there's still an infinite amount of good things that you could do with your 24 hours. So you've still got this infinite amount of things to do. So then you've got to start making some really tough choices. And winners choose. They choose what to do. They don't let things happen to them. They make things happen. So what you end up doing is saying, okay, I've got all these good things that I could do. They all, let's put it into business terms. All these things make profit. But how much profit? Look at your life on a profit and loss basis. And you'll say, well, actually, I could go and do this, but the better value, the better impact on my profit or loss line in my life would be to do that. And so what you're looking for is to do a limited amount of things that you can be great at instead of a load of things that you're good at. And this is your inch wide and a mile deep, mm-hmm. Dan, where you say, okay, I can make the most impact by doing this. So I'm actually going to ask my wife to do the kids' run today, even though I could have done it, because this has even more value to us as a family than me doing the school run. Now, very little actually has more impact than spending time with your kids, I accept that. But, and maybe from that point of view, this was a bad analogy, but at the end of the day, you need to choose what you are going to do rather than letting life guide what you are going to do.
Yeah. I face this challenge right now in my life where I end up spending a lot of time doing a lot of things. By no means am I doing them badly. I'm doing them at a level where I'm, I would say, at least average to above average within, let's say, media, fitness, and whatnot space. And the challenge is, I guess, making that choice of what do I invest all of my energy on? And it's, the reason it's not easy is because when you push aside the things that you feel are not beneficial or not something you want to do for the next 20, 30 years, there's a period, I guess, of maybe even 2 to 3 to 5 years where the one thing you're going mile deep on still is not necessarily like blowing up in success, right? You literally got to be in the dumps doing that one thing or those one few set of things you're on, not knowing if it was actually worth it to focus on that thing.
Okay, I'm going to try and unpack that.
Yeah.
It's this pretty, my mind is racing. There's so much here. You're introducing so much into the mix here. Let's look at that great life, which is a series of great years, which is a series of great weeks, frankly. And a great week is a few good days. You don't have to have perfect days every day, but you want 4 or 5 good days to make a good week.
Uh-huh.
Okay, all that comes down to in a good day. So a great life, it starts with a good day. That comes down to choice. The myriad of choices that you have to make. You can do the Steve Jobs thing and cut out ties for a start, then you don't have to make a choice. You got rid of one of those choices, because we want to make 4 or 5 great choices a day rather than 17,000 really inconsequential choices. What color tie I'm going to wear. And Steve Jobs wore a polo neck every day because that meant he didn't have to make a choice every morning. He removed one choice so that he could concentrate on the big choices. I like that. So rather than making a choice, set in some rituals so you don't have to choose some things in the day. Rituals are what you called habits earlier. These are consistent behaviors, intentionally practiced and precisely scheduled on a daily basis. Now, if you can have a ritual that says, I get up at 2 minutes to 4 every morning, 2 minutes before the alarm goes, I will get up. And that way I don't wake my wife. Then that's a ritual. There's no choice there. I don't go to bed saying, shall I get up in the morning? The choice is already made. It happens every day. And therefore, you don't have to make a choice. So remove choices by putting rituals into your life that really work. On Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I take the kids to school in the car. You don't have to make a choice. Your wife doesn't have to think about it. You don't have to ask about it the night before. You don't have to get up in the morning and say, who's taking the kids to school? It happens. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, I'm taking the kids to school. That's it. That's a ritual. It happens. So if you can set those things in place, now they, you can have rituals around work. Okay, from 12 o'clock, midday, until 2 p.m., I am going to leave my phone in the office and I'm going to go out and I'm going to reflect on business strategy. Fine, you're not going to be interrupted. But you put a ritual in on a daily basis that you're going to be up on the hill looking at the big picture of your business rather than down in the trenches fighting the quick battles that you fight for the rest of the day. That could be a great ritual for some people. So you put structure around your day, you get back to choices, so that you have removed a load of choices because the structure is there. At this time, I do this. Therefore, you don't have to make a choice. It happens. Now, there are times when you break that choice because, you know, the house is on fire. But if the house isn't on fire, that's what happens. Now, that leaves you with choices. The important choices are now left. Okay? And there are still a myriad of them. There could be far too many of them. So what you do with those choices is you make it binary. In my view, I apply one question to a choice. I could do this or I could do that. And the principle I apply is, which one will give me growth? Choose growth. Which one is ease, comfort, pleasure? Okay, last night, finished a lovely supper that my wife cooked me after a pretty hellish day where lots had gone wrong as well as right. Beautiful supper, and there was the packet of IKEA dime bars, which just happened to sneak into my eyeline. I had a choice. I could satisfy my craving for something quick, which was probably an emotional craving after a day that hadn't gone exactly as I wanted it to go. Or I could choose growth. I could choose pleasure, dopamine. Or I could choose growth and serotonin, oxytocin. Go and sit with my wife on the sofa and not eat chocolates until it was coming out of my pores. And I chose growth. Because if you just choose growth, you'll make all the right decisions each day when it matters. And at that moment, that was an important decision. If you add up a pack of dime bars every day for the next 365 days, I guarantee I will have diabetes.
And often it's the most uncomfortable.
And exactly. Growth is almost always the opposite of comfort. It's almost always the uncomfortable choice. But it's almost always the one that leads to serotonin, which is this wonderful gut. 95% of serotonin is produced in your gut. It's a wonderful mood drug. It is the happiness drug. Interesting. Comfortable and pleasure are synonymous. Discomfort and growth are, in my view, synonymous. You can choose one or the other. I always try to choose growth. Sometimes I'm in autopilot like anybody else. I'm not superhuman. I am completely normal. I do the wrong things quite regularly because I fail to choose. And I just go on to autopilot. Oh, look, there are the dime bars. I'll have some of those. There was no choice there. I just did it automatically because they were there. Somebody had opened the packet. Somebody bought them in the first place. Who did that? Okay, but choosing growth is the answer. So I think we can all just stop for a second, especially when we know the answer is always within us. We know that discomfort is likely to produce happiness. Serotonin is down-regulated by dopamine. So the more pleasure you have, the less happy you'll be. That's really disastrous, isn't it? Okay, everybody wants to be happy in life. But in terms of the chemistry, the more pleasure you indulge in, the less happy you will be. Which is why often you'll find that those with the most assets, the most resource, the richest people in our worlds are the least happy. And they're the least happy because they have the most access to pleasure. They can buy the fast woman. They can buy the alcohol. They can buy the cigarettes. They can buy the trip to the south of France 5 times a year. Well, remember the peaks and troughs. If that becomes normal, that's not happiness. So that dopamine down-regulates the serotonin. And serotonin is discovered in the poorest people in the poorest countries of the world. You will find happy people in the slums. You'll very rarely find happy people at the very top of the financial tree.
Is the argument to focus on chasing serotonin versus dopamine?
Yes. Why not? If you want to put it into chemical terms, let's produce serotonin. And remember, serotonin is produced in the gut. So it's very much about what you eat. And happy bugs. And before we get into all sorts of biology, when it comes down to it, that militates towards a healthy diet if you want to be happy. Because if you've got a healthy diet, you're going to be feeding those happy bugs. The happy bugs produce serotonin, and serotonin, through a thing called the vagus nerve, comes straight to the brain and says, wow, I've got a great life. What a great place to be.
That's where the gut feel comes
the
from.
The gut feeling. Go with your gut.
Good old gut feel.
Go with your gut. And also oxytocin, which is all about connection with people.
Yeah.
Oxytocin softens the heart muscle, quite literally softens your arteries. Hardening of the arteries, get more love. And it's good for you.
It's where one of the biggest feelings you get, I personally find as well, going back to what we talked at the beginning, is the feeling of giving as well. So you're connecting with people you're giving, and that's, I don't think there's any better feeling than that sometimes. Well,
it's wonderful, isn't it? Yeah. Dan, you two are talking a very mature talk. It took me well into my 50s to get anywhere near the level that you two are speaking at. Fantastic. Yeah, let's make life better for somebody else, because that'll produce oxytocin. Let's make love rather than have sex. That'll produce oxytocin. Let's let's just make somebody else's life better. That'll produce oxytocin. And oxytocin softens your arteries, means you're less likely to have heart disease, less likely to have hypertension, high blood pressure, less likely to put on weight. So it's all about people.
Yeah.
Health is all about people. And you can increase that by having good sleep, good nutrition, a little bit of movement. You don't have to be completely lunatic like me, but you can just do a little bit of exercise.
You can be like you. But it's from what I gather with you as well, just from meeting you today, is energy. Probably, that's probably a big thing for you, is just your energy is your sleep, it's what you eat, you're talking about, it's time with your wife, your relationships, how you feel in certain ways, like your emotions, always. You're very conscious of your energy, almost like a currency, and how you give people your energy. And
well, actually, energy is the currency in Ironman racing.
Yeah, true.
Because you've got a pot of energy. Think of a bottle of water. You've finished a swim, mm-hmm. and you've used some of your bottle of water. You then finish the bike, and you're down to perhaps a quarter of your bottle of water. And you want to finish, this is your energy, you want to actually fall across the line as the bottle of water is dry. That would be a perfect race. You don't want anything left in that bottle at the end of the race, because that means that you didn't do as well as you could have done. So energy is my currency, undoubtedly. In my life, it's my currency. But energy comes from four sources. And you've mentioned indirectly, but let's look at them as four sources. One is physical. Well done. Sleep, nutrition, exercise. That's your physical energy comes from those three things. Then you have your emotional energy. This is relationships. This is doing good by somebody else. Making somebody else's life better every time you come across somebody new. That will give you a huge amount of energy. And you can do that racing. You can do that in any environment. You can do that with your wife, your partner, whoever it might be, on a daily basis, if you have one. If you don't have one, then go out and make the guy who lifts the barrier on your gate, make his life better. Okay? That is emotional energy. Then you have the mental energy, and that comes from one place, and that is goal setting. If you know where you are going, then you will have mental energy, because you know that doing what I'm doing right now is going to take me towards that goal. If you have no goal, then any direction will do, and you won't have any energy. So goals will give you another 25% of your energy. 25 is physical, 25 is emotional, 25 is mental, and the last 25, for me at least, and, you know, I can only talk about myself because I only know myself well, is spiritual. And I don't mean religion. I just mean right and wrong. We all know what right and wrong is. We particularly have been lucky enough to be brought up in an environment where right and wrong has been quite clear. It's black and white. You know what is right. You know what is wrong. When you do the right thing, you have energy. When you do the wrong thing, it empties you. Imagine driving in Dubai and you're in a four lane and it's going down to three lanes. What happens to the right hand lane when four lanes goes to three lanes? They go zooming up the outside to the last safe moment and then they violently cut in as much as possible. They force their way into the gap as best they can. And you sitting in the third lane think, you arrogant so-and-so. Doing that, you must think you're better than all of us, because you, by zooming to the front, you've put all of this queue of traffic back by one car, mm-hmm. because you're more important. Now, you can think that way. Or you can see this guy coming up fast on the inside because he's going to get in as late as possible, and you can pull back and leave him plenty of room to get in. See how you feel when you do that. Because you are giving to him, despite the fact that he probably, you don't know, but he probably doesn't deserve it, doesn't matter. The fact that you've given this undeserving so-and-so the space, rather than using your energy to close that space, will feel great, I guarantee it. Now, the reason I say you don't know is because, for all you know, he's got a sick child in the back seat and he's rushing to hospital. We do not know. Therefore, give him the benefit of the doubt, dress back and you're doing the right thing. Guaranteed, you will feel a release of energy when you do that, even though he's a so-and-so. And guaranteed, you'll feel a drain of energy if you fight him and either win or lose, you will still feel a drain of energy by fighting him and trying to force him in behind you rather than in front of you.
Yeah.
So doing the right thing is this last bit of energy, this last 25%. And doing the right thing for me comes down to walking into a room when I'm 106. I'm going to walk into that room and I'll feel great. And that room will be full of all the people I've ever known, all of the people I've ever loved, all of the people who've ever loved me. And in the middle of that room, there'll be a box. And all of the people in that room are talking about the man in the box. And I'll see that it's me. And I'll be completely invisible to them. And I'll go around that room and I'll listen to what they're saying about me in the box, dead. Because I'll be dead in 106. It'll be my wake. I'm going around that room. This is how I want to live my life now. I don't always do it. I get it wrong. I'm going around that room listening to what they're saying about me. And what do I want them to say? I want them to say David was a generous guy. I want them to say David was a nice guy. David was a sociable guy. David was a kind chap. What I don't want to hear is, David was a generous guy, but he owes me 50 quid. I don't want them to say David was a kind guy, but do you remember how rude he was to that ballet guy at the Mandarin Oriental? I don't want them to say David was a kind fella, but he had a bad temper. Because every time you put a but into any English sentence, it completely negates whatever came before the but. So David was a kind guy, but he was rude to the valet guy, means he wasn't a kind guy. So I want to be going around that room when I'm 106, hearing no buts. There can be no buts in those sentences. Of course I don't get it right. Not all the time. But if you can think of that's where your energy is coming from by doing the right thing on a daily basis, by living a life where when you die there won't be any buts about the guy in the box, that's a pretty good place to get lots more energy. And I do that on the middle of an Ironman. I'm thinking, what is the right thing here? You know, I could cut in front of that other athlete and take the last Coca-Cola off that table. Or I could just run for another mile and a half and there'll be another Coca-Cola for me and let him have it. What's the right answer? Well, the right answer is to let him have it. It really hurts when he's in my age group and I am actually racing that guy, but it would be wrong. And I would lose energy and I would probably cost me the race if I was to cut him up and decide I'm going to take the last Coca-Cola.
I already know this is going to be a podcast that I come back to again and again and again and again and again. This has been the most valuable conversation I think I ever have. And I'll also add one thing to that moment when you're in the room and you're walking around. You're going to be a person that has no regrets. It's going to 106, he's going to look back on his life and think, I have no regrets. And I already know that from, just talking to you today as well.
Regret's an interesting one though, isn't it? I think my definition of hell, and by the way, much of what I've spoken about today, I've read about, I've picked up in conversation. I have no original thought. So please, anybody who I've quoted by accident or misquoted, even worse, please forgive me, but these are the messages that you probably designed and I have stolen, plagiarized, and now spreading out. But the bottom line on this is that hell would be meeting the person that you could have been when you die.
Yeah.
That would be so depressing. That would be an awful place to be.
Yeah.
So for me, I want to be the person I could be. Every potential, every opportunity, let's seize the opportunity. Some people talk about luck, fate, whatever you like. But I believe luck is actually being prepared to take the opportunity.
Yeah. Doesn't it?
Those are lucky people.
Yeah. You get pretty goddamn lucky when you're always prepared and ready for
yeah,
it, right?
When you're ready to take every opportunity. I've got this wonderful son called Max. And he just says, my stock answer is yes. No, sorry, what was the question? You know,
yeah,
and he's ready to have a go, whether it's climb a mountain or run a marathon. Doesn't matter. He'll have a go. He might not have trained for it, but what's the worst that could happen? He'll have a go.
Awesome, David. Well, thank you for this. It's been incredible, honestly. There's nothing more to say. I'm going to be listening to this podcast multiple times this week, this month, this year, and I am confident that countless people will as well.
Well, thank you. I feel honored that you have me on. And thank you very much for listening. I hope it helps somebody. Royal, you'll be fine.
Thanks for listening. Leave us a review. Tell us what you think. Find us at Instagram, failforward.pod. If you know someone that wants to be on the show, or if you want to be on the show, give us a shout, DM us. We'll see you soon.